I'm decorating for Christmas, and you are listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, Jack. Yep, it is that time of year, getting out the holiday decorations. I love it. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to have you along for the show. This show being number 999. And I laugh because, oh my goodness, we're almost at 1,000. That will be next week, and we'll be airing the event that we taped a few weeks ago at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. What we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our wonderful engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio, and it is that time. I mean, you gotta get the holiday decorations out. You gotta put those lights up. And we've seen a little bit more snow than we're used to in recent years this year, which, hey, I'm on board with. I like snow. I don't know if that's a popular opinion. I grew up here. I love cold weather. I like the snow. And, you know, it makes me appreciate the summer that much more. But it's time. I mean, I feel like it was time to decorate maybe a few weeks ago. That's just me. But get your tree time on. It's the most wonderful time of the year. We've got a wonderful show for you today. We'll talk about what happens after CPS students graduate. Do they go on to college? What does that look like? Also, the new editor-in-chief of the Chicago Reader will be here with us, and some new local holiday music. Stick around. Tis the season. You know, I love the Chicago Reader. It has been a trusted alternative weekly newspaper for more than 50 years. And the Reader has always produced important journalism from local politics, investigative reporting, culture, music, and the local art scene more broadly. The Reader has really been driving the local conversation and continues to do so. Earlier this week, the Reader announced a new editor-in-chief, Sarah Conway. Sarah is a local investigative reporter, and she worked for 8 years at City Bureau, where she won the Pulitzer Prize for her reporting in the series called Missing in Chicago. That was a 2-year investigation into how Chicago police handled missing person cases. Sarah Conway, the incoming editor-in-chief of The Reader, is here with us today. Sarah, welcome back to the show and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Mike. I love your show. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm loving all this because The Reader's great, you're great, and I'm wondering here, was this something, this editor-in-chief position, was this something that was ever on your radar, or did you just kind of stumble upon this because you were doing all this great investigative work, and here you are becoming the editor-in-chief of The Reader. So was this something that you thought maybe would happen one day?
Excellent question. Very serendipitous moment in my life. I have been really focused on community-based investigations for really intensely the past 7 years. And I love local journalism. You know that about me. I'm very committed to community-focused news, creating stories, investigations, projects in a lot of different mediums that Chicagoans can see themselves in. That's like really at the core root of all my values as a journalist and a writer, an editor. And I heard about the Reader position actually right when I was about to actually leave to go overseas. It's a little bit of a strange thing, but I really, really deeply love the curation community in Amsterdam in Europe. And I've learned so much from how they have created as artists, kind of a very similar, I feel like, to the local journalism ecosystem here, really a really thriving network of independent and sometimes underground cinemas. And I was actually in Amsterdam when ICE and Border Patrol really robustly came into the city. And I was really watching from afar seeing how that was impacting communities here and people that I really love, and the ways that Chicagoans, like they always do, really turn up and build with one another. And I think there's such an amazing legacy of resistance that is really just baked into the DNA of being a Chicagoan. Mm-hmm. And watching that from afar with the political climate that the US is in right now, I really have always seen journalism as a form of public service. I think we all do in many different ways.
Yeah.
And for me, I saw this role as kind of the nexus of a lot of different values and aspirations I have, and also a commitment to, when the time comes, to also show up and be a leader in local media. And I see that, you know, Americans and people across the country, I should say, people love alternative media. Like, yeah. I started reading the Chicago Reader when I was a teenager. It was like the paper that when I like got in the car and drove from rural Illinois to Chicago to go see movies at Music Box, it was like the paper that I picked up and read, you know, like,
sure.
And it's been like that for generations of people. And so I heard about this role and I just felt that it was really the right time for me to step into a editorial leadership position and to be able to work with the Reader staff and bring more people and new voices into the Reader at this time, because I think we're at a moment where we need independent media and alternative media more than ever in Chicago, but I also think across the country. And there was a lot of alignment and values that I personally have with Noisy Creek, which had acquired the Reader, as well as it's a new media company that is really invested in reinvigorating beloved alternative weeklies and local media brands across the United States. They also work with The Stranger in Seattle and the Portland Mercury. And so it just was a dream job for me, and I'm excited to join it. I have nothing but love and respect for the Reader staff and all their contributors. And I'm excited to join the team and continue doing more investigative work, more, you know, strange, odd features. I think I really want to bring a lot of stories to the Reader that people in Chicago and all parts of the city, that they can really see themselves and their families and their communities in news. You know, it's just a dream job. So I'm really excited to join the team.
So, you know, it's funny because your story of driving to Chicago, reading the Reader, I have a similar story when I was, and I've said this before on the air, but going to Loyola University, Chicago as a freshman, and being on the L and reading that brick of a paper that the Reader was at one point. I mean, for me, there was nothing more Chicago than that, when you're on the L and you've got the Reader and you're just taking it all in. And what I really loved about the Reader, and I still love, is the tone, because I think the tone of that reporting, in addition to the fact-based journalism and the investigations, but the tone is very Chicago. I mean, you talked about that resistance piece and how Chicagoans aren't going to stand for stuff. I think that comes through in the Reader, and I think that's really relatable to everyone who picks that paper up, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the Reader has historically, over like its five decades of existence, it's always been tapped into, I think, you know, community and what people are doing here in the various ways, whether that's film, whether that's art, whether that's music, I think politics. Like, it's always offered, I think, a very like grassroots and independent, but also I would say like a unique perspective, because it's just trying to be itself. You know, like, yeah, it is a paper that is like open to and willing to do weird stories and interesting stories. And that's why I think the Reader has really pushed the envelope in a lot of ways throughout its entire time as this beloved, iconic Chicago brand, in doing work that really reflects the city and reflects the undercurrents. It reflects, you know, the power in the city. It's really exciting that we still have an alternative paper here, as others have declined around the country. And I think that it's exciting to also be part of what feels like a network of alt weeklies that are continuing and continue to grow as well. And so, I couldn't agree more. I think that's the number one thing that I've been hearing from people as I've talked about this next step in my life, is how much people love the Reader. You know, I was at Thanksgiving and I was talking to a bunch of old head relatives who, you know, were young people in the 70s in Chicago. And they were just talking about like what the reader was like when they first started reading it. And it's so interesting to see how in an alternative weekly over the years, like how it really stays with people. And so many people have these memories of when they first started reading it and stories that were in the paper. And so it's a total delight and pleasure to be able to join this team and also, you know, step into the next chapter of the paper.
What is your vision for the next chapter of the paper? Here you are coming in as the new editor-in-chief of the Chicago Reader. So where do you want to take it? What's your vision here?
My vision for the Reader is I've been thinking a lot about the relationship that people in Chicago, and I think also Chicagoland, have to local media. And I think that we're so lucky that we live in a city that is really leading in local news nationally and even internationally. When I travel, a lot of people know of Block Club. A lot of people know of The Tribe. Like, a lot of people have heard of Southside Weekly. I mean, like, how amazing to go to a different like place in the world and people are referencing like your local newsrooms.
Right.
And I think that's Chicago for, you know, like, we're always killing it. That's why Chicago, we all know, greatest city in the world.
That's right.
But like, it's really the truth. Like, there's so much talent and art and vibrancy here. And so I really see myself joining the Reader doing a couple things. I really want to reinvigorate the Reader's investigative work. I want to bring more and develop more investigations with staff that are really focused on how issues in the city impact everyday people and really challenge systems of power here in the city. I also want to really reinvest in doing like very eccentric, weird, curious, and fun feature stories. This is like kind of a dream job for me. So I think a lot about like the journalism that made me want to be a journalist. And I want to work really with staff to bring a lot more feature stories to our readers. I also want to really have like, you know, build out the vision that I want people on the South Side and the West Side and the North Side. I want people all over the city to really see themselves and their lives and the things that they love in the pages of the Reader, and for it to be a city paper that people can really look to and feel connected to it. And so those are, you know, several of the big picture things that I really want to do with the Reader. But I also think that I want to continue on like the legacy that this paper has of doing just really exceptional arts coverage, political coverage, music coverage, film coverage. And I think like, what a better place to do this, because Chicago is a global city. I mean, it's both like it's a local city, but it's also a global city. And so like, I feel that this paper has such a future and already has such a tremendous, you know, past and present to build off of. So that's where I'm really looking to take the paper and to experiment in video and other formats. And I'm truly excited about it.
I mean, this is such an incredible just resource that we have here, the Chicago Reader. And as you mentioned, really part of a collection of wonderful local alternative sites and some hard copy papers. And hey, look, you know, here we are in the 21st century, living in the future, as I like to say. And there's been a big push for online content. And the Reader obviously has a website, chicagoreader.com. And, you know, the paper itself has shrunk a little bit over the years. There's no doubt there. But is that something you're really looking to tap into? You mentioned, yeah, hey, look, maybe some video, maybe some audio. But is that going to be a priority for you as well, in addition to the actual physical, tangible paper?
Yeah, I think that I like to look at audiences in terms of local journalism, that they are vibrant and complex. I think the reality is that research shows that a lot of people are getting news online, and specifically a lot of people get news in Chicago and Chicagoland through social media. There's been immense changes in how and where we connect with the information that we're getting. And so I think that thinking about this like legacy news outlet, the Reader, is that it is both a print publication, but it has an online audience as well. And I think that the exciting thing is examining how can we bring both together and marry them and build out, because there's a lot of different ways that people are connecting with information and they're all very important. And so the future of the reader is print, and it's also online as well. And I think that that's kind of like, you know, one of the exciting things of being a journalist. And I'm sure you've seen this too in your career, Mike, like that we've seen kind of this flux and flow of like our own relationship with the internet. And personally, I consume a lot of things. I get a lot of things from social video myself. Like there's if we think about it in a sociological perspective, like people are changing the ways that they're connecting with information. On the other hand, I do want to say that print, I do think that people in this age of technology and AI and algorithms, there's just something that is so tangible to be able to actually hold a print product in your hand that I think people really value. And I think that there's possibilities with print, that there's ways to connect with communities that we haven't yet. And also just literally holding something still matters. And so I'm excited that the reader is a place that we're going to do both.
I just think this is really exciting because the reader, with such a rich history, you know, with arts and culture, like we've been talking about, but also something that you want to continue, that investigation piece, that investigative reporting as well. I mean, the reader's been vital for that in Chicago, and it really is Chicago, and just kind of encompassing all areas of the city, all kinds of people. And Sarah, you are in the middle of it. You are going to take the reader into the next chapter, as it were. And I'm so excited for you, Sarah Conway, the incoming editor-in-chief of the Chicago Reader. Congratulations, Sarah. This is awesome. I am going to be consuming the reader, of course, as we all will, as we go into 2026 here. And I'm excited to see where all this goes. Congrats, and thanks for talking to us today.
Mike, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a huge fan, and thank you supporting the Reader and also local media in Chicago. You do so much for everybody, and it's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'll talk to you again sometime soon.
When we talk about education in Chicago, there's the obvious emphasis on how well our schools are doing. But what happens when students graduate from CPS? What is their level of their post-secondary educational attainment? Well, the annual report that explores this question is out right now. It comes from the University of Chicago's To and Through Project. That's an organization that strives to create equitable education outcomes for CPS students by helping educators use data for inquiry and impact. Alexandra Usher is the Director of Data and Research at the To and Through Project, and she is here with us today to give us some insight into the new report. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Mike. Great to be here.
We should mention that toandthrough.uchicago.edu is the website, and we can get the full report on that site. So just thinking big picture here and your work, you're really focused on trying to increase school completion. You're using research-based data, specifically looking at marginalized communities in Chicago as well. So broadly speaking here, it seems like you're really trying to help kids be successful overall. If you boil it down, that's kind of what you're doing, isn't it?
That's right. Yep, exactly. And so we're part of the Kirsten Institute for Urban Education at the University of Chicago. And the To and Through Project specifically focuses on trying to translate that research into actionable data and tools for practitioners in the school system so that they can use that to improve their practice and ultimately improve outcomes for students across the city.
So when we say that this data is used by CPS in this case, and teachers and administrators, how does that work? Because you're gathering a lot of information. This report is very thorough. There's a lot to kind of go through here. How do educators use this data once it's out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. We work really closely with our partners in the district, both in the administration and the central office, as well as throughout the city, leaders in school buildings, teachers, counselors. We do a lot of in-person workshops. We actually offer public workshops as well for our online data tool that allows folks to really deep dive into this data for every community area and school in the city. You can find those on the events page of our website. But we really try to, we really believe that data isn't going to do the work on its own. It needs to be partnered with training and other information, and to really make it actionable, it has to come alive in the hands of people who are doing the work.
Right. And the people that get this data, they have to understand it because there's a lot there. And then they have to think to themselves, all right, what do we do? What decisions do we make? What policies do we put in place? Or how do we advocate for kids? And the data, I think, is a really great way to see that. You know, I'm wondering here, because part of what you're doing is tracking students after they leave CPS. So how does that work? Mm-hmm. How do you get that information? Because once they're out, I mean, they're out there. How do you keep track of them?
Yeah, good question. Well, we are lucky to have an extremely talented team of data analysts and a close partnership. We have a data sharing agreement with Chicago Public Schools where we're able to access data both while they're in the system, but then, as you said, once they graduate, there's actually a national, it's called the National Student Clearinghouse, and it's a national data set that collects data from colleges. Colleges report voluntarily on students who are enrolled at any given time, and then the clearinghouse turns that around and gives it back to districts or other partners so that they're able to see what happens to their graduates and whether they're enrolled in college in any given semester.
This is a really thorough report. Again, it's up at toandthrough.uchicago.edu. And just looking at some trends here from this report, Alex. So you've been doing this report for many years now, and looking at
this is the 11th one.
The 11th year. Wow. Well, I mean, and your data even goes back further than that, if you want to extrapolate this, but the CPS high school graduation rate since 2008, we've seen an increase, and that's a good thing. Last year, it dipped a little bit to about 83.7% overall. But is there anything that we can take away from that statistic, that trend that's, you know, I guess, slowly increasing over time?
Yeah, I think the city has made huge gains. There's been so much work done across the city and across the system to support students to be successful through high school. And you can see that, as you said, in the numbers and that 20 percentage point increase in the graduation rate since 2008. I think one thing to note about this most recent year, so this graduating class that finished high school at that, like you said, about a 1 percentage point dip from the previous year, that class started high school in the depths of COVID. They started high school in 2020. And I think we, you know, especially as adults, it's easy to, we've kind of carried on with life. We've hopefully put that behind us, but it is really still having a effect on students and their day-to-day experiences. And we're still seeing those repercussions.
Yeah, that's something. You're right. We want to put the pandemic behind us, but really the impact of that is still being felt, even if we can't necessarily see it every day. And that kind of leads into looking at four-year college enrollment since 2011. That's been increasing. So the high school graduation rate increasing, but also college enrollment. What can you tell us about that trend?
Yeah, we've seen a pretty steady increase in college enrollment since 2011. Students who finish CPS and then directly that next semester enroll into college, into a four-year college, that number is almost 50% now. It's 49%, and that's up from 38% just back in 2011. So big gains in four-year college enrollment rates. Two-year enrollment is also, we actually saw an increase from last year of about 2 percentage points of students enrolling right into two-year colleges. So actually about two-thirds now of CPS graduates are making an immediate transition into college, which is higher than the national average, despite the fact that CPS serves a pretty different student body than the national average. We're actually outpacing that number.
You know, that gets us to this statistic that I really want to break down here, the college completion rate. So this is something that you're looking at as part of this report. And you found that 56% of students who immediately enrolled in a four-year college and 32% who enrolled in a two-year college completed a bachelor's degree, associate's degree, or some kind of certificate within 6 years. So can you break that down for us? Is this a good statistic? How does this stack up to other places? What's going on here?
So I think this is the place where we are a bit behind the national average here. But I think a couple things to note. One is, like we said, the enrollment has been going up into college. So CPS is sending more and more students into that pipeline, into college. So there's still a lot of work to be done to make sure that those students complete, because it's, for the most part, not a great outcome if a student starts college and doesn't complete a degree or credential. However, this graduating class that we're looking at in the report, so the class of 2018, which is, since we allow 6 years for them to finish college, that's the most recent high school class we've got the college data on, that class had actually the highest number of students ever finishing a degree or credential from CPS in the history of the system. So we had 7,300, I think, and change students from that 2018 high school class complete a college degree or credential, and that's the highest number ever. At the same time, there's still a, like you said, a significant number of students who are starting college and not completing. And so I think that's really the leading edge of the work here is for the whole system, because this isn't just a CPS issue. You know, these students have graduated CPS. CPS is doing some pretty phenomenal leading work, leading the nation in this alumni support work. They're now supporting students for a full 2 years with counseling and financial supports after they leave CPS. But I think it's also, you know, a motivating call to the higher education ecosystem to really step up and do their part in that handoff, make sure students are successful.
And as we think about this college completion rate, do you in your research ever go into why some students don't complete college? Because I feel like there are a lot of variables there. You can think about the cost of college. Things just happen in people's lives. Maybe interests shift or job opportunities present themselves. So it might not always necessarily be a bad thing if you want to think of it like that, but maybe some other opportunities. So do you ever go into that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. We really believe that. So, you know, what this report looks at is the quantitative data, the numbers, the high level trends, but that doesn't tell you the why. It's kind of like you want to see inside that black box as to why is this happening? How is this happening? And so we have a whole series that I would really encourage folks to check out on our website called Student Stories, where we've interviewed, I think at this point, over 40 CPS alums and families about what that, exactly that question of yours, like, what was it like for you to go through high school? Where were their supports? Where would you have liked to see more? What was the transition to college like? Why did you decide to take a semester off or to drop out or to transfer? What was sort of like driving that path for you or that decision? And there's such rich stories that we're so lucky to have had students share with us. Because you're right, it spans everything from family issues to financial issues to it wasn't the right fit. They had a change in, you know, life plan, just so many different things that can happen.
When you think about this report in the context of the national conversation about Chicago, and I say that because, you know, Chicago's kind of taken a beating here, I think, nationally with everything that's been going on politically and this, you know, the narrative of crime here and, you know, some leaders saying that Chicago is this hellhole. But thinking about the role of CPS in all of that, I think there can be a narrative that says, well, because we hear all these stories, the school system must be garbage and must be struggling. When you think about the data that you have gathered, this report that you've been now issuing for the last 11 years, how do you respond to that sort of narrative that's out there right now with the data that you're seeing?
Yeah, I think it's a great counterpoint to that untrue narrative. There's so many bright spots in the data, both in this report and in our broader online tool where you can dig in at the school and community level. There are so many neighborhood high schools making huge gains, seeing huge success with students going to college. And there's just so many places where the district is really leading the country, I would say. You know, when we talk to folks from other cities and other major urban systems, or even some of the wealthy suburban systems, they're frankly pretty stunned to hear what is going on in terms of using data, in terms of supporting alums, in terms of college planning that's really thorough and thoughtful. And I would say that Chicago is kind of an unknown gem in that respect.
Which is amazing, because again, I just think that that's not going to be top of mind for a lot of people. And I think kind of the lazy argument is, oh yeah, Chicago, it's on fire and there's all these problems. Yeah. Not to say that there aren't problems around here, because there are. And, you know, I think kind of digging into that, I mean, where do you see a legitimate place where Chicago and CPS specifically can maybe get its kind of house in order? I know that like when we look at the racial breakdown in this report, we definitely see a disparity there. But where is an area of focus that maybe the district wants to kind of think about?
We do. Yeah, I think especially for our young men in the city, and most especially for our young Black men. And the district has launched a Black Student Success Plan that I know they're really standing behind, despite, you know, pushback they may be getting. Consistently, students across race, ethnicity, and gender groups tell us that they want to go to college in surveys, that they aspire to earn a college degree or credential. And that's not what we see, that how we see the outcomes play out ultimately. And so there's a gap there, and there's a disservice that's happening to students somewhere along the way. And I think where we, not just as CPS, but where we as a city can really rally is helping students, helping them achieve whatever their desired post-secondary outcome is, and really preparing them to be successful in whatever that may be. You know, I think if we prepare students to be successful in college and then college isn't the right choice for them, then they're going to still be successful in whatever that choice is, because they've had rigorous planning and preparation. And so I think it's not just about the CPS system, but really we're lucky in Chicago to have this rich ecosystem of philanthropy and of nonprofit partners and community organizations and higher ed institutions. And it's somewhere we can all come together and say, let's support our young people to find success.
Well, this report is fascinating. I think there's a lot of really vital information and information in this that can help guide the future of CPS and even school systems beyond the boundaries of Chicago. So we can go to the website toandthrough.uchicago.edu, and we can see this report from the To and Through Project of the University of Chicago. And Alexandra Usher is the Director of Data and Research at the To and Through Project, and one of the authors of this report looking at post-secondary educational attainment, among other things that we've been talking about today. Hey, Alex, I really appreciate the time. Thanks for all this hard work. It's really interesting stuff, and best of luck going forward.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yep, the holidays are upon us, and what better way to celebrate the season than with some local music, some jazz music, and this is really cool stuff. Local guitarist Kevin Brown released an album of music perfect for the holidays called Adventus, and the music has some history running through it too. We could check out kevinbrownguitar.com to get the record, and Kevin Brown is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. So congrats on this new record, and we'll dive into it in more detail here in just a bit. But first, a little bit about you. So you are a classical and jazz guitarist. You are formally trained. You went to school for music, and you're very accomplished in that regard. You've played all over Chicagoland and continue to do so. So you have this kind of, I don't know if it's like a classical background, but this is something that you are formally trained to do, and that kind of informs how you're approaching your music, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, most certainly. Yeah, for sure.
And so in terms of what you're playing here, I said it's jazz, but I think there are elements of classical music. How do you describe it?
Well, that's a good question. There is on the new album one piece, which is a theme and variations, which is arranged for classical guitar. So that one, you know, probably falls within the range of the classical guitar literature more so than the jazz, although maybe some of the harmonies that are used, harmonic concepts are kind of jazz informed. I would say for the most part, the record itself, with the exception of that one tune, would fall more within the jazz idiom. There are some, you know, elements of composed and arranged things. I think that's kind of one of the fun things about it. some of the tunes on the record are pretty old, going back to Renaissance and medieval periods. And I think it's kind of fun to take music like that and then sort of reimagine it with, you know, harmonic concepts that didn't exist back then, and, you know, rhythmic concepts perhaps as well. So I would say, for the most part, it's very informed in the jazz side of things and the improvisation and the way we treat the music. It's very much structured in the way that contemporary jazz would be structured.
Mm-hmm. So you've got this jazz influence and a little bit of this jazz structure, but I said that the music on this new album, again, it's called Adventus, here in this Advent season of the holidays. You know, there's some history here, and some of these tunes have some roots in like the 13th and 14th centuries. So tell us a little bit about that history, how it's kind of woven into the music, because sure, most of this does fall into the kind of the jazz genre, but there are some sort of medieval elements in this too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, some of the tunes do go back quite a ways. Of the Father's Love Begotten, for example, dates back to the 13th century. So that would put it in a medieval period. And, you know, medieval, we're talking like Gregorian chants, like in the church, you only have one melody sung in harmony, or sorry, in unison or octaves. So there's no harmony, no accompaniment. And you can kind of hear in the way that track starts, we play the melody in unison in sort of a non-pulsatile manner. So it doesn't have like a pulse to it. And I think the drums probably wouldn't have been, they wouldn't have had a drum set. It didn't exist at the time.
Right.
You know, electric guitar, keyboard, electric keyboard, you know, the sounds aren't not necessarily things that people would have had at that time, but, you know, the non-pulsatile monophonic rendition of the melody is kind of like, you know, that's how you would chant it.
It is kind of cool that there are some, you know, more traditional, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term, holiday tunes on here. But this is, you know, here we are in Advent in the Christian tradition, and this album is called Adventus. And so that's kind of the theme here. I mean, this is maybe a little bit of an opportunity to listen to this music and kind of slow things down, pause a little bit, reflect on what's important here. So sure, we're going to hear jingle bells a lot this season. You got that. And, you know, Santa Claus is coming to town. Totally. But this is more kind of in that pensive, maybe thoughtful, meditative kind of tradition.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair characterization. There's some intense things in there, too. You know, more intense emotions and musical feelings. But yeah, I think it's intended to create, you know, some space for reflection. There's maybe a couple things on here that are more familiar, like O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, maybe Angels from the Realms of Glory a little bit, the Angel Gabriel from Heaven Came. I feel like maybe those are some of the compositions that people might recognize more readily. Some of the other ones are a little bit more obscure, and I think maybe in part two, part of the intention is, I appreciate a lot of the holiday music that there is, but, you know, at sometimes it's like, oh, well, I've heard that before. Well, I've heard that before. Well, right. I've heard that before. And I think in some ways, some of these tunes people haven't heard before. And frankly, like of the Father's Love Begotten, I didn't even really realize that was intended for the period of Advent at first. I just thought it was a beautiful hymn. But after some further observation, it turns out, hey, would you look at that? That is an Advent-themed piece of music. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of cool to be able to bring some music to the table that maybe some people don't know. And Maybe it could become something that people become familiar with and enjoy around this time of the year.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, let's talk about the gigs that you have coming up. So the record release show is coming up Monday, December 15th. That's at 7 p.m. This is at the Church of the Resurrection. This is in Wheaton at 935 West Union Avenue in Wheaton. Tell us about the record release show.
Well, it'll be a fun time. It's being hosted by realconcerts.us, which is an organization run by cellist Jake Muzzy, fantastic musician. And he's been putting this concert series on. It's been probably at least a few years. And so he's hosting the concert for us. It is a pay what you want concert. So we do ask people to RSVP just because space may be limited. Mm-hmm. So we just want to make sure we know what to expect. But, you know, realconcerts.us, you can get there either from my website or just directly, and you can request tickets. You can also chip in there. And it is a pay what you want concert. So, you know, some people may not be able to pay very much. And, you know, we're grateful if they can come and enjoy the music with us. Other people might be able to chip in a little bit more. And that helps, you know, with the overall endeavor. It's going to have the full quintet. So everyone from the record is going to be there. Really, really fantastic band. I am so grateful I get to play with these guys. And the fact that we found a day that they could do a concert in December was amazing, because right. These guys are incredibly busy for good reason. We'll play, obviously, music from the record. We do have some Christmas, more specific Christmas-themed music in our playbook, so we might pull some of that out as well. But I think it's just going to be a great time for a concert in a nice, I guess you could say it's an intimate setting. We do have one other date I wanted to draw attention to. December 18th is a Thursday. So for people that, I think this show is called Outside the Loop. If there's anyone tuned in that's inside the loop, or, you know, inside the city, we are playing in the quartet at the Checkout, which is on North Clark Street in Chicago. That's December 18th. The Checkout's a new music venue. It's like a converted 7-Eleven. And we're playing as a part of their label night. We're representing the record label on this album, Jeru Jazz Records. And so, anyways, if anyone you know, wants to check the band out, we'll be a quartet for that one. But that's Thursday, December 18th at 8 p.m. Again, details are on the website.
And that address is technically outside the loop of the downtown. So, okay. Hey, that's there great. You. There you go. Perfect. Perfect. So we could go to your website, kevinbrownguitar.com, for all of the information to get the new record and to see where you're playing next. Hey, Kevin, I really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for chatting today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop, show number 999 is done. Thank you very much for listening to the show today. Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN Radio studio. And next week, it's the 1,000th episode. We will hear what took place a few weeks ago at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. I have an inside kind of track here. It's a good show. So you want to come back for next week's show, the 1,000th episode. Until then, I hope you have a great week. Talk to you again next time, right here on Outside the Loop.